Okay, welcome everybody. Let's see if this actually works. Hi, Tony.
We're officially on the air.
We are indeed. And we're a little fuzzy around the edges. We think this might actually be a dream. We're not sure. Can you see us fairly clearly?
Yeah, I can. There is a little bit of fuzz on either side, on the right and left side of your screen, but you're perfectly visible.
Good. You had a couple of questions for us, didn't you?
I did, actually. I've always been super interested in cichlids, and I think anyone who wants to start with cichlids might want to start small. And I was thinking, you know, what's the smallest cichlid that I could keep if I wanted to get started with just one fish? If I did, how big a tank would it need, and what sort of care, and what sort of fish?
Well, there are a couple of possibilities with that. If you want to go with just one cichlid, you're going to lose out on a lot of the interesting social behaviors, of course, that cichlids tend to demonstrate. But that's not necessarily a bad thing because you can get another behavior set from a cichlid that's by itself. It'll tend to pay more attention to you. In fact, I've seen a lot of people who train cichlids. They'll get a firemouth or a green terror or something like that, which I don't recommend for a small tank, but then they'll keep those in a small tank, but they'll get a lot of interaction in terms of the training. But I would say if you want to start out with a really small tank, how small are you thinking? 10 gallons, smaller than that?
I would guess it probably wouldn't be unreasonable to do a 10 or a 20, and wondering if it would be possible to do even a 20.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with the 20, you have quite a few possibilities. I would say that you could keep quite a few of the Mbunas. Choose from the selection of the many species of Mbuna and keep one in a 20-gallon. One of the fairly smaller ones, like a yellow lab or electric yellow cichlid.
It's a dog.
Yes, it's also a fish. Or an electric blue Johanni, something like that. And it would do really well in a 20-gallon tank, and you could have a lot of fun with that. If you want to go with communities of cichlids, you could go with shell dwellers. They're very interesting. The Lake Tanganyikan shell dwellers are quite small, and you could keep a whole community of them in a 10-gallon tank. Start with a breeding pair, a breeding trio, or something like that, and you'd end up with quite a few fish in that tank, and they'd be perfectly comfortable because they're so small.
Okay. Wow, that's really interesting, actually.
I think we've got Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Welcome, Matt.
Yay!
So, should we go back to the original idea of how this is going to work? You start with your news and all that? Or are we just going to jump straight into the questions?
Well, we looked and we couldn't think of any news we have for this week.
We're boring this week.
So we might as well just jump in. Yeah.
Well, let's keep with the cichlid question.
Yeah. Okay. So where were we then, Tony?
You were chatting about shell dwellers and the possibility of keeping a community of those in a 10-gallon tank, which I thought was really interesting. I think... Another nice advantage there is, you know, cichlids really kind of have a reputation as being tank-busting fish. And right. As a total beginner myself, I sure wouldn't want to get started with one of those if I had a small tank. But the
right.
Shells sound really interesting.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about them being outgrowing the tank, but you do get a lot of the cichlid interaction. The interesting and complex behavioral interaction. And of course, with a 20-gallon, you could go with one angelfish. It would do fine in there, and they're very interactive. Angelfish will dance for you and get very interested in what you're doing. You can train them to do tricks and so on. So that would be another direction to go.
I've been learning recently how many varieties of angelfish there are. I had no idea. There are just dozens and dozens. So even with just that one suggestion, it opens up a whole world of possibilities, doesn't it?
Right. There are so many new varieties now. When I started keeping angelfish, there were quite a few, but every few years they're adding the new ones. You get the blues and the koi angelfish and the pearl scales, or what do they call them? Yeah, I think that's what they call them. The ones that have the kind of the curly scales. So all
curly
kinds of things.
Scales?
Sort of. It's hard to describe. Kind of like crinkled tinfoil. Hmm. Yeah. Can't think of the name right now. But anyway, yeah, there are some possibilities for cichlids. So do we want to go on then, Matt, to some of the questions that you had?
Let's start with the easy one. Do you need flakes if you've got fish that can eat pellets?
I don't think you do. And I think it's nice to have them for variety. It doesn't hurt anything. But I don't think you need pellets. I mean, I don't think you need flakes. I think one characteristic of flakes that is maybe a disadvantage of flakes is that they have more surface area. So they do leach nutrients out into the water faster, so you're going to get more bang for your buck nutrient-wise with pellets, and if the fish will eat them, then, you know, there are, of course, as you imply, that there are fish that won't really go for pellets, and then you have a something.
What kind of fish are reason with pellets?
It's less of a kind of fish and more just individual fish, I think.
Just individual preference?
Yeah, some of them really don't like pellets, and others are fine with them. So. Is that what you find, Matt?
Yeah, well, the discus, for example, will only eat worms, so I don't have an option there. Can't give him any pellets, but the rest of them, they'll just eat whatever they can get. I mean, when they're hungry, they're hungry.
Unfortunately, we didn't get everybody on this time, but now that we have some of the wrinkles ironed out, maybe we can get more Aquaramaxers on next time.
So we're missing Mick. Mick wasn't able to get through.
Yeah, I sent him another invite, but I'm not sure it's going to work, so we'll see what happens.
South Shore Bob, and who was the other person?
Mike. Sean and...
Oh, Sean.
And Mike, yeah. But it's nice to know that we can send invites and people can join one at a time. They don't have to join all at once, so we can fix that in the future if that's happening. Yeah, and I have had fish that won't take flakes or that won't take pellets. They'll just take one or the other. Or fish that won't take anything but live food, and, you know, you have that too, like with your discus. My first generation of Celestial Pearl Danios wouldn't really take dry food at all. So it was mostly...
And was that because they were wild?
They may have been wild, but I don't know if I got them wild or not, but they wouldn't take anything but live food. They were microworms and Daphne and things like that. And then their children took anything. They were completely unpicky as far as that went. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. I said, told you in the message, but I've got some babies.
Oh yeah, you've got some baby bristle noses.
Yes, they're
cute.
Congratulations.
Thank you. They're so small that if I did have it on the tablet and I tried to show you, you wouldn't be able to see them. They are. A few of them still have their yolk sacs, to give you an idea of how young they are. They're,
oh, wow, very young. And so is the male still protecting them then?
The male would be if I hadn't. I just recently put the tank on the stand, on the cabinet I've been making for a long time. So the male couldn't protect them because I had to take all of the fish out of the tank, obviously. So now they're in one of those little floaty things at the top of the freshly changed tank.
Oh, okay. Like a net breeder.
Yeah, yeah, but it's made of, it's plastic, but yeah, that's basically what it is. I wonder if I can I put the photo up? Can you do that?
You can click on screen share on the left, right?
There we go.
Oh, there it goes. I can see the tank, yeah.
Really gorgeous.
It is.
Yeah, so it's really hard to see, but that kind of blur is where the bristle nose are in there.
Okay, like I can kind of see the blur. Yeah.
And that little thing there, that dark spot, that's one of them.
Okay, I can actually see the dark spot. So
yeah, that's what I'm a little bit.
Now, Matt, this is the famous tank, or rather the famous cabinet that you built with your own two hands then, huh?
Yeah, it's got, this is just skirting, like that you'd put on the side of a wall that I just cut size, and that's actually for a picture frame that, again, I cut, and there's just some nice handles, and yeah, same kind of deal here. It took quite a while, and the plumbing actually is attached to the back, which means that normally it was very rigid and solid, and it would just try and spill water everywhere, but now that it's permanently attached, it's all like easy to change the filter, and it makes it a lot more fun to do a water change, which is important. Not a water change, a filter change.
Right.
And these are the cichlids I have in there.
Oh, nice. So, cool. Mostly Mbunas?
Yeah, I don't really know exactly what they are. They're some kind of hybrid. But okay. And as you can see, fish, they just take blurry photos. It's very hard to get them to stay still.
Yeah.
It is.
But these are really cool if you don't already have one. They're digital thermometers. It's just great to be able to see exactly what the temperature is. And they're only like $10 or something.
Is that what's up on the corner there?
Yeah, that's what that is right there.
Oh, okay.
And you can, the nice thing is too, you can have the probe in the tank, but you can have the thermometer, you know, anywhere the cord will reach, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. I could have a lot prettier than that, but I've just got it kind of dangling in there.
Well, no, I think I love those. I have one, and I like them a lot. But I think the tank looks really great, and so does the stand. And that's the one that you sent the initial plans for, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is what I was going to show you if the iPad actually worked. I would have opened it up. And there's about there, about two-thirds of the way up, there's a shelf in there. So you can fit the filter and like some buckets and then your food and I don't know, extra tubing and stuff on the top bit.
Have it all
and it's all yeah. And it's all made of marine ply and it's got marine varnish on it, so I mean I've already spilled a little bit of water in there and it's not gonna do any damage to the wood, which is really important.
That's right. Really nice.
A lot of the lower end stands that you can buy at like a big box pet store are just like particle board with something shiny on the outside, but it doesn't help much if you get a leak and it gets down into the bottom, it starts swelling and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta send you a photo of the old stand and how swollen that was. That was not very pretty.
But this one's great.
Yes. And then there's gonna be a hood, but the hood's almost done. It's not finished yet. But that's the cabinet, the main bed.
Oh, so you're gonna put like a wooden canopy over the light fixture.
Yeah, basically. Cool. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna put like you see when the professionally made ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little doors and everything and yeah. Oh,
I think it's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful too. And one thing you said about the shelves, I think that's a great thing to be thinking about, of course when you build one, but also when you're looking for one, we're looking for a stand. Shelves are almost indispensable. I find, like, under our goldfish tank over here, I've got shelves with a breeding colony of springtails and three different kinds of isopods and fertilizers and scissors and filter pads. You know, there's so much down under there. And in a small apartment like we're in now, I mean, that space is at a premium. Those shelves, really, I really need them. So, good thing to think about.
So how do I stop the screen
capture? I think you just click on, did you click on screen capture button again? I think that would...
Am I back?
Oh, yeah,
I'm back.
Yay.
Okay, I'm back. Okay, I'm back. Okay, there we go. Should we go into the second question that I had?
Yes, let's do that.
This is a pretty big one. Why do you keep fish?
Why do I keep fish? Yeah, I've been thinking about this one. I've been thinking about it because it's a good question. I mean, I'm fascinated by every living thing, including plants. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm fascinated by it. And I've had experience, you know, with various species. I've bred birds and mammals of different kinds, even a species of marsupial. I bred sugar gliders once, years ago. All kinds of animals are fascinating to me. There's nothing that I don't find interesting. So why is it that I keep fish so much? And I think one reason is that fish have this peaceful zen quality they sort of impart to the room. Can help you relax. You get to see them, most species, at least when you look in the tank, you get to see them. It's not like some animals you get and you never see them. You know, they're perfectly happy in whatever they're in, but you can't see them like
that. Well, I feel like that about our geckos.
Our
right
geckos
now.
Are kind of like that right now.
We have a pet terrarium.
Yeah, because there are only there are a couple of geckos and a couple of eggs in a 20-gallon tank, and it's really too big for them, so you don't really see them all that much. But with fish, generally, you can see them when you look at them, which is nice. And the fact that they're weightless as far as they're concerned, you know, some species anyway. Their swim bladder allows them to just actually be weightless, and I think that feeling sort of helps him part of that relaxing feel to them. And then they're a lot easier than a lot of pets, too. They don't take a lot of space, and you don't need to take them out and exercise them when it's, you know,
snowing outside.
15 below zero outside, things like that. It's rather nice. But I think another thing is that inside the glass box of a terrarium, or of an aquarium, it's true for terrariums too, but you can create an ecosystem, which with a lot of creatures, you just can't do. I mean, your dog's not part of an ecosystem, even though a dog can be a great pet, but...
It's part of the family when you have, ecosystem.
Yeah, it is, but when you have fish, you can have the living plants, and you can have snails and shrimp and all kinds of things going on, and it's fascinating in that dimension just for itself that you have all of these organisms interacting. And I think that's very appealing too. Those are some of the reasons. There are probably others. Can you think of any I've ever mentioned?
I don't know. Those are good. We've never really discussed why you keep fish. You just keep fish.
Just taken as a given. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when we moved to Hawaii, it was a week after we moved to Hawaii. We got our fish because I was just.
He was kind of going nuts.
I need some fish.
I'm gonna die if I don't get fish.
What about you, Tony? What do you keep fish?
Oh, a lot of the reasons you said would be the same for me. I think that I find it really appealing to have a pet, which is in an enclosed environment. The tank smells great. It's really easy to do a water change, and it just strikes me as being a lot simpler than, say, taking care of the gerbil cage or walking the dog or changing out a cat litter pan. So it's very practical for starters. I think that the relaxation aspect is wonderful. I feel like there's a lot to learn. And somehow keeping fish strikes me as being a lot more scientific than keeping other kinds of pets. So that's appealing too. I can definitely feel like a big shot when I'm rattling off the Latin name of one of the pets that I'm keeping. So that's always fun too. There's just always more to learn and always more to see. So I really appreciate that about the hobby. There's just always something new to see. And the camaraderie in the community is a lot of fun too. Especially Aquarimax, right? But it's neat to be able to hit any of the boards and find out more and get step-by-step. And where I am anyway, a lot of the people in the hobby are really gracious, really friendly, and always willing to share their knowledge. So I think that's also a plus. Hey, how about you, Kelly? What would you say the appeal of fish keeping is for you?
I get to keep him. Sorry. I never had fish before Russ and I got married. When we got married, I couldn't really tell the difference between a molly and a goldfish. We walked into the pet store and I'm just like, they all look the same. So it's been fun to learn more over the years from us. But I think the relaxation factor is definitely in there. I love the goldfish and the koi for that reason. That's my favorite.
And one thing that I've noticed is that she's kind of modest about it, but she has learned a lot over time. The other day she looked at our paradise fish and she said, he swims a lot like a betta, doesn't he? And noticing the subtleties that a lot of people wouldn't notice. And she'll walk into the store and say, hey, that's an anabentid of some kind, isn't it? And things like that, that she knows more than she lets on, I think. She's learned quite a bit.
And yeah, it's fun to see cute.
It. I like to see that.
I believe it. It definitely comes across, Kelly. That's for sure.
What about you, Matt? What's your reason?
Well, I got my first fish tank when I was 8. And they've just always been there. And we just kept getting more and more, and we'd breed them, and so then they'd have babies, and you have to put the babies somewhere, and that was always a lot of fun. I always used to delude myself that you'd actually make money breeding fish, which you can't, unless you really, like, make it boring and industrial and like a business and not like a fun hobby anymore. Mm-hmm. But, like, one day, when this is not the first 6-foot, we used to have a 6-foot before, and then it went away, and then we got the one we've got now. And I came in one day and I just saw this like spiral of fry, or just like 2 feet high of fry all around the Brasiliensis that we had, Geophagus Brasiliensis, the American cichlid, and it was just really awesome watching. And all the other big fish just ignored them. They just like heard them and they'd move as one giant organism from one end to the other end, and they just knew to follow them, and it was all very cool. And it's also nice when people come over because everyone's drawn to it. Everyone is drawn to the tank, and they look at them, and they go, oh, what's that, and what's that called, and is that silver shark actually a shark, and all that kind of thing. And they put them in dentists. I mean, there's a reason they put them in dentists, because they help calm down kids, and they help calm down people in general, just having these things that are drifting around and don't seem to have much concern. I guess that's it. I certainly don't keep them for the power bill, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, those are some good points you both brought up. I think
it's true, they're great conversation starters.
They are. They really are. I've noticed that. I always have some fish and usually a few other creatures in my office at work, and that often helps. I know when I go to the doctor, we may have talked about this before, it helps me if I'm feeling really sick to go sit by the tank and critique the tank and say, I wonder why they chose this species. And, you know,
I would do this with the tank. So, yeah. It's probably not what most people think when they go into the doctor's office. They just think, oh, look, fish!
That's true.
That's right. Maybe you can tell a lot about a person by the kind of fish they keep. So yeah. If you walk into a friend's house and they have a piranha, it's a really different experience than a friend who has some neon tetras.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. That might break down when you have multiple tanks. Maybe you can't tell anymore. But
is that a split personality?
Yeah, but I think that's true. You can often tell if someone has just tank busters. Sometimes you can think, oh, you know, what are they? Why do they have
a sports car and a tiger on a leash, right?
But you never know.
No, I'm just kidding.
No,
See, I sort of have a policy of not keeping pets that can kill me. You know, so I'm not really a piranha person or a lionfish person, but I tell you, for the people that keep them, really stunning, really interesting fish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are. They're fascinating. I love lionfish, the way they look, but I wouldn't keep one either.
Piranhas are illegal in Australia. You're not allowed to have them in because too many fish get released into our water supply. But it's amazing how many do that. People just go, oh, I don't need this anymore, so I'll just flush it down the toilet, or they'll just let it go on the stream, and then it just takes off. So we have quite a lot of invasive fish in our local streams, unfortunately. But we still have lionfish in the, and that they don't seem, I don't think they'd survive. It's too cold, so that's not really an issue with them being released. Yeah, I guess that's an issue, but I don't think I'd have an issue with keeping a lionfish. I'd have an issue with keeping a marine tank. That would be, that's hard. They're a lot more complicated. You have to pay more attention.
And it's more expensive, too.
A lot more expensive.
The power bill, among others, is usually pretty high. So. Yeah. But even just buying the materials you need, getting a tank that's drilled or whatever with a filtration system, pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, not for people with commitment issues.
Well, I did just set up a little 1 gallon saltwater tank recently, as you might recall.
Yeah.
For hatching the nerite snails. And
how's that
although.
Going?
You know, the nerites never really came around, but the sea monkeys have hatched, so I'm excited about that.
Cool.
It's officially my 1 gallon sea monkey tank now.
Is it something you can show us today, or is something we'll have to see in the future?
Ah, that one is in my tank at work, so I cannot show that one today.
Okay.
You don't want to go to work on a Saturday?
No, for some reason.
Well, it looks like you've got some interesting show and tell stuff back there, though. Or is this strictly just a background?
Oh, nope. These are set up just for the show. A little bit of my fish keeping collection.
You know what? I got to say, I think one of the books that you've got up there is one of the same books that is up in our bookshelf.
I think it is.
Oh, which one is that?
The kind of bluish green cover over, it would be over your right shoulder on the top.
Ah, this one.
Oh, no. Maybe it's your left shoulder. Sorry. That one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Diana Wallstead's book. Yep,
oh, no, wait, no, maybe it's a different one. That's okay. It looked one of yours. One of your old ones.
Okay, that's the one you bought. Recently.
This is the famous third edition, that's why.
Yeah.
That's right. So, with the extended appendix that fully discusses the siesta period.
Cool.
So, really great book. I had to show that off, of course.
Yeah, we love her. She's a darling.
Her interviews are very interesting. Very interesting indeed. It was great to have her on the show.
Looks like you've got fish school back there, too.
Oh, a little bit of everything. Yep, a little bit of everything. The fish school, yep, for training fish. I haven't given it a try yet, but I look forward to it.
Oh, it's fun. I haven't done the entire fish school, but I have the target sticks. And, yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And some experimenting with tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when you do everything in the box, you get to graduate to Fish College, Fish University.
Yeah, you get a fish degree.
That's right.
And you've got tryops back there. Is that a calendar with tryops?
Oh, actually, it's a poster that came with my tryops kit.
Oh, okay, cool.
And indeed, I have not yet gotten into tryops. I look forward to it. I had my tank all set up, the perfect tryops tank, and then I had an opportunity for killifish, and I dropped some killifish in there.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember that.
My new latest idea for a perfect tryops tank is to drop some of those guys in there, and also some Daphnia and ghost shrimp. I think those carnivorous ghost shrimp might be a good addition to a tryops tank.
Oh, yeah.
To keep it in order.
Don't you
think they'd handle the load maybe somewhat?
Yeah, I think they could probably handle that. I've experimented with various tank mates with tryops, and anything too small, they generally eat it. But if it's a ghost shrimp, it could probably handle itself, I imagine.
I wonder. So, maybe with lots of hiding places for the ghost shrimp, that might be worth a go.
Right, and enough food for the tryops. If they're well-fed, they're not particularly aggressive with anything. It's just they're hungry all the time, so you have to make sure keep that balance of water quality and getting enough food.
I definitely have far more aquariums in my head than I have in the real world, but it's a lot less expensive that way, too.
Matt was asking, what are tryops?
Oh, what was that, Matt?
What are tryops? I've got no idea what you're talking about.
Do they have them?
Could you show us the picture close up? They do have species in Australia. I'm trying to remember the species name that I'm familiar with from Australia. They call them something else there typically, though. There's a company in Australia that I believe calls them dragons. I can't remember now, but I think the species might even be Australiensis, Tryops australiensis, or it might be Lepidurus australiensis. Anyway, if we can get this picture, they might be familiar to you. Although, the ones in Australia, I believe, have a longer tail.
They're not a fish.
Their telson's a lot longer.
Like ancient crustacean-y things.
Wow. Okay.
Here's a look at your typical triops, and this one is probably Longicaudactus, one of the more common triopsin at North America. I know that there are a number of triops species like Canciformis and the Australiensis, so it's a lot of fun to be able to learn about the different kinds and decide which one you're going to keep. They're not long-lived at all, but they grow so fast, and it's amazing that they start out as tiny little eggs, but can grow to actually quite a huge size. How big would you say, Russ? Maybe like 2.5 inches, 3 inches maybe when they're adults?
With the caudal appendages, yeah. Yeah, the species we're most familiar with in America, the Longicaudatus, yeah. Probably about 3 inches with the tail extensions. And Canciformis actually gets quite a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And there are some other species,
oh, really?
Too. Yeah, yeah, the Canciformis can get to be, I think, twice that size.
That's interesting. I'm pretty sure that species does better in colder water, too, so maybe they live longer and they're able to reach a greater potential that way. I wonder.
That's what I understand. Yeah, they do live longer and they're in cooler water. To hatch them, you don't need anything warmer than room temperature. And I haven't kept that species. I've only kept Longicaudatus. But like you say, they'll grow so fast. I once did a little math to compare it, and if you had a triops egg the size of a chicken egg, and you let it grow for 2 weeks, it would be the size of a great white shark by the time the 2 weeks were over.
Wow.
It's a big chicken. It's the chicken of Bristol.
Yeah. And you can literally tell the difference from morning until evening. If you check on your triops while they're growing, you can see a difference. It is interesting.
Do you want to do a basic definition of what a triops is? You're talking about how they grow, but they're...
They're
crustacean.
Ancient crustacean. They say that Canciformis hasn't changed for over 200 million years. I think it's something like 208 million years.
So they'll market them on the boxes, living fossils.
Living fossils, dinosaurs, things like that. But yeah, they're a lot of fun.
They don't live very long.
And the nice thing is when you don't have time to take care of them anymore, you only have to wait a few weeks, and then you have lots of eggs to start over with when you have time again.
You just let the water dry out.
So I have a big bag of sand sitting in my office that whenever we feel like it, we can just toss a teaspoonful into a tank and start some more.
And all fresh water, too. Fresh water animals, so easy to keep.
Right, they're extremely easy as long as you feed them enough.
Matt, what were you going
to
say?
I said that's very convenient. Not have to worry about keeping them alive after they're in egg form. That doesn't apply to many fish. There are a few exceptions, but it doesn't apply to many fish.
Right. I guess you could go that way with killifish or maybe lungfish, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did it work in the wild? They laid the eggs, eggs dried out, and they would just wait all year until the temporary pools of water, rainwater, would fill up, and then they would hatch.
Right.
So they would stay right
there. That's right. Little pool animals.
They are very cool. And there are a lot of species like them that I've kept. I mean, most aquarists are familiar with brine shrimp that do the same thing. They just need the salt. But I've also kept freshwater fairy shrimp, very like brine shrimp, that are freshwater, and clam shrimp, which look like little clams that swim, seed shrimp, which often show up accidentally in things. Some of the copepods, like the cyclops, do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all kind of interesting, fun crustaceans. A lot of times you can keep several species together, and it's interesting to just pour some sand in and then watch what hatches this time. Sort of. I have to ask you all, are you getting some children noises in the background?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Their cousins are over for sleepover because it's their parents' anniversary. So we told them we would watch the kids overnight so they could go have a date for their anniversary. And we're telling them, guys, we're trying to do this thing. But, you know, there's 7 kids downstairs.
So we're trying to keep it to a dull roar. Hopefully we can...
Nobody's bleeding yet, so it's a successful...
So successful so far, yes.
Well, I can go tell them to be quiet again.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Well, this has been fun.
Yes, it has. It's nice that it's finally working, and that's really good. Have you had any word from the other 3 people who were going to attend but haven't managed to?
Well, let's see. I did hear from Mick, and he said that he wasn't able to get on, and I sent him a message to check his Google ID and made sure we had the right one so I could invite him.
I don't think we heard back from him.
But we haven't heard back from him, so he may have given up. I know the time difference is pretty large there, too, so he may not have been able to stay and try that. But other than that, haven't heard. Did you have anyone else in your chat before? we got on
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did. Can you remember, Tiny? I've forgotten who.
Yeah, it was Sean. We had Sean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, but we left him.
Right, he was out on his bicycle.
Oh.
Oh, that's a hard place to have a webcam chat.
Yes. Holding his phone up in front of him and
we
to watch for traffic.
Paddle faster, but back in time for the show. He's okay. With us in spirit.
Yeah. And at least everybody can join in by watching this once we're done. And then I think this has been successful, and since we've ironed out some wrinkles, we'll just have to do it once in a while just as a normal thing.
Yeah, just,
we'll just a recurring
have a little bit of a learning
kind of
curve.
Show, yeah.
And I told the kids that they needed to be quiet because their voices were carrying all the way to Australia.
Didn't last very long, though, did it?
No, I think they probably just thought that was cool, so they're like, sweet, let's see where else we can get to.
Yeah, I've noticed, though, there's a critical mass thing with kids. Once you get past 5, you really can't keep them quiet. And since we've got 7 of them down there now with all the cousins, that's...
oh, no, we can do. Calming effect of fish doesn't help.
Well, there's
only
one
got
fish
downstairs.
More tanks, quick.
Give them some goldfish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, did we have any other questions we wanted to go over or anything? Or?
Yeah, those were all the questions we had, I think, for now. Is there anything else that you would want to talk about?
Oh, let's see. I guess what I'll do is let me see if I can get you a parting shot of one of my tanks. Cool. Maybe I'll attempt it. Give me about a minute. Hey, Matt,
right.
Why don't you tell us again about the different tanks that you have set up right now while I run upstairs and try to do this for you.
Okay, so I think I've pretty much talked about the 4-foot as much as I can. It's got a male and a female Brisbaneau's in there. And, you know, if you put a male and a female person together, you can't guarantee they're going to get along, but my one male and one female Brisbaneau's got along and they had babies, so that was pretty amazing. And then in the other tank I have 5 silver shark, 8 clown loaches, a few fire mouse, a discus, coolie loaches, believe it or not. You'd think the coolie loaches would be eaten by something, but no, they keep on going. And yeah, it's just big and awesome having 170 gallons of water to play around with.
Oh yeah,
that'd be amazing.
Particularly awesome because I use the power head to do the water change, as I've told you in the past. So I just watch it. I just watch it pump all the water out
for the show,
and then I watch it go all in again.
The show.
And I, did a big water change of both my tanks in preparation for this. But unfortunately,
iPad
can't really carry this all the way. Okay,
yeah,
here we go. Here's a fish tank.
There we go. This is the Zebra Daniel tank. We've got 3 Zebra Danios, we've got 2 golden white clouds, and somewhere in there there's a little yellow glowfish.
So one of the GMO Danios?
Indeed. Yep, this is my daughter's fish tank, and I'm fond of telling her it's the most beautiful tank in the house.
Well, I really like how you got that big, healthy patch of Java moss going. It looks really nice.
That's right. It started off from a small but very welcome donation, and boy, has it blossomed.
Oh, yeah.
This tank never has ammonia, nitrites, or nitrates of any kind.
One of the best sponges for that sort of thing, nitrite sponges you can get.
How old is your daughter?
Oh, she's almost 5 years old.
Oh, fun.
So does she take care of the fish mostly herself, or does she get some help?
Oh, she gets a little help from Dad, and she helps out a lot, too. Hey, do you want to come on the podcast and say hello? You want to come smile? No?
What's
okay, you don't have to.
What's her name, Tony?
Oh, her name's Tara.
Tara, that's a beautiful name.
Yep, and she's awesome with fish.
Good
Dan loves fish, and she loves fish too.
Good to see that she's starting out right. And it's interesting. I bet you get those fish spawning in that Java moss once in a while.
You know, they haven't yet, but I think maybe they're just eating the eggs in the fry before I notice, perhaps.
That's what I'm guessing is happening, because with zebra danios and that much moss, or white clouds, if you have a male and a female, you can hardly stop them from spawning. But you can definitely count on them eating most of the eggs if you've got zebra danios in there. Most are all, yeah.
Maybe one day I'll fill the bottom with marbles and see if I can save some of the fry that way.
Oh, yeah. White clouds by themselves, too, they'll be fine. They usually will leave a lot of the fry alone, but the zebra danios are gluttonous, so... That's probably what's happening there.
It's naughty.
But that's lovely. I'm glad we've been able to see Matt's tank, even if we couldn't see it live. We could see the photo, and then We can see this tank live. That's fun.
That's good. Our webcam moves around. Does our webcam move around?
A bit, yeah. Yeah, that's good. I don't think it would get all the way to any fish tanks from here.
I could show you my dogs. They're in the room. I can't really show you any fish tanks.
What kind of dogs do you have?
I have an American Staffy. Timba, tell me. I have an American Staffy, and I have a Kelpie.
Oh.
Come on.
This is Simba.
Simba.
Hello, puppy.
He doesn't want to be up here right now. They've just been sleeping very peacefully in here. And he's a rescue, like the other dog is. And then, see if I can get her to get up. Just a second.
Did I tell you I had an Irish wolfhound in my dream last night?
No.
This is Lilo.
Cute.
Oh, I love Lilo's face.
Oh, what a cutie.
That's a cute face.
She's I don't know if you've seen the movie Lilo and Stitch, but she's named. Well, they're both named after Disney characters, but this, because she doesn't have the best social skills sometimes. She wants to play with everyone. I understand that everyone doesn't want to be her friend. But she's also a rescue dog, and people didn't want to get her because she was too intense, I guess, but you just have to know how to look after them.
That's good. Rescue dogs are the best dogs.
It's true. They are.
We had a rescue for a while, and then when we moved to Hawaii, we weren't allowed to take anything with us.
But we found her a nice home in Colorado.
Where she was an only dog and spoiled rotten.
Lived very happily.
Yeah. Russ had actually had nightmares about that the whole 3 years we lived in Hawaii, about all of the critters we had to leave behind.
That we had to rehome. That was sad.
Yeah, it was sad.
But when you have a job that takes you to Hawaii and you don't have any other prospects for a job, that's what you do.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, Opa and Ula are kind of like little dogs, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe a little smaller, a little redder, right? But basically the same.
Yeah. You know, they beg for food. It kind of works.
They don't bark.
No, that's true.
They're not much of an alarm system.
Well, I think, unless we have anything else, it's been great to talk to you both. And we'll look forward to doing this again.
And thank you for your patience with all the technological goo.
Do you have any parting remarks you'd like to make before we wrap up?
Just, hey, Russ and Kelly, thanks for having us on the show. It's exciting to enjoy this whole new dimension of Aquarimax.
It is indeed. I'm glad it worked out. It's been a lot of fun.
And there you have it, folks, the first Aquarimax live Google Hangout. It won't be the last. Since we've recorded it, several Aquarimaxers have chimed in and said that they hope we do it again, and I think that's a sign of success. Kelly and I certainly enjoyed it. So did Tony and Matt. So we will do it again. We'll probably make it a regularly recurring part of Aquarimax. It'll be fun. And we can also do some of our interviews that way. We'd like to express our regrets that some Aquarimaxers who planned on being part of this hangout weren't able to do so. But we're hopeful we can do it again, and that all of those who were not able to join us tonight who had a desire to will be able to do that in the future. And I think we'll be able to work that out. Special thanks to Tony in New York and to Matt in Perth, Western Australia for participating today. And an additional thanks to Matt, who really got all this sort of arranged and spent a lot of time and effort editing the audio-only version of the show that you just listened to. So kudos to Matt, and thanks for all your time and expertise. We've received feedback. I mentioned we had received some, but Mick in Carnforth, UK, Tom in Provo, Utah, and Greg in Jamestown, California all mentioned that they enjoyed the Hangout show and would like to see it again. So that is certainly a sign of success. Once again, thanks to all for joining us, and until next time, may the fish be with you.